At 8 years old, I was already experiencing racism. I couldn't label it, I couldn't categorize it, but I knew it made me feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But it also built my resilience to then be the person that I am today.
Hispanic culture is a big culture for white, African Americans. Like, everybody loves our music. They enjoy our food. They enjoy our clothing, our dances, all of it. What would a life or a world look like without Hispanics, Latin American?
We are the guardians of girlhood, paired with multi-generational perspectives. And when we say that every girl has a story, what do we mean? Well, we're here for the girl searching for her people, the girl craving an outlet, the girl with an incarcerated parent or a broken home, the girl who hides in the bathroom at lunch, the girl who doesn't believe in herself, the girl with big dreams but no idea where to start. By opening up and sharing experiences, we not only empower ourselves, we inspire others. We express, we create, and we elevate. This is Love Girls, the podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to Love Girls, the podcast. I'm your co-host, Jasmine Babers-Gunn, and today we're wrapping up our Race Reimagined Girls Healing Illinois series, a special project from Her Voice Media rooted in one simple belief: storytelling is a form of healing. Throughout the series, our young fellows have stepped into the roles of interviewers, storytellers, and historians, learning from educators, advocates, and community leaders on how race, identity, and lived experiences shape the places we call home. Together, we've been asking a big question: what does healing actually look like in our communities? And today's guest feels like the perfect person to help us answer that. We're joined by Daisy Moran, a proud daughter of immigrants, longtime community advocate, and she's the current director of the Quad Cities Community Foundation's Center for Nonprofit Excellence. Daisy often calls herself a product of Quad Cities nonprofits, sharing how her own family found housing, education, and opportunity through local organizations after immigrating from Mexico. Now she's come full circle, leading and strengthening the very systems that once supported her. We are so grateful she's here to talk with us about identity and community and the power of nonprofits to help change lives. Let's get into it. I'm Jasmine Babers-Gunn. Don't forget the gun. And I'm your co-host. I am excited to be here. I'll start off with, I'm a dog mom. I also happen to be the founder of Her Voice Media. I'm a mentor. I am a gardener. And I am working on my florist license to be a florist. And I will pass it over. I'm going to mix it up. Please. I'm going to pass it over to our talented sound engineer, Amaya. Did you know you were coming?
Hi, my name is Amaya Woods. I'm the production and communication assistant here at Her Voice Media. I am also attending Augustana College, majoring in physics engineering. I also, in my free time, I like to draw and paint, anything DIY. Okay.
Let me bring you over to my house. I got some projects. The condo needs some projects. Kayla Babers, no gun, the sister to the lovely Jasmine Babers. She gotta let y'all know she's married now. I am the director of visual creativity for Her Voice Media. And I'm your favorite auntie. I'm gonna pass it to one of my favorite fellows here at Her Voice Media, Tamaya.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tamaya. I am 17 years old. I do CNC, which is programming machines, and I'm also a 2026 fellow, and I also do a little bit of photography, and yeah, and I'm gonna pass it to Ileana.
Tamaya, girl. Okay. Hi, I'm Ileana. I am 17 years old. I currently attend Rock Island High School. I am one of the fellows. This is my second time. And a little thing about Daisy, she's actually my mentor, and she's amazing. I'm going to pass it on to Daisy now.
This is Daisy Moran, pronouns she, her, Aya, proud dog mom, proud mentor of Ileana. She's incredible, and honestly, she inspires me more than I think I inspire her.
We love the community.
I love it when we get
all these brown
together.
Girls is just filling my heart.
We love it here. Daisy, this is not your first rodeo on Love Girls, the podcast. So I feel like you have been doctored into the podcast family already. So it's good to have you back because you essentially belong here, really. Like, I mean, you are welcome on the mic anytime. We're really, really excited to have you. And a little bit about the project and like the special edition series that we're doing, that we're working on, is essentially the girls talking about and exploring the idea of race and what it looks like to use storytelling as a healing mechanism of racism, and specifically from like their lens, like young voices, like young female voices, young brown female voices, and their thoughts and ideas on what it looks like to heal from racism using storytelling. And so you are rounding out this series that has been really, really eye-opening and kind of hard at sometimes, you know. We've had hard conversations, we've had funny conversations, and we're really excited to bring you in and get your perspective and your unique experiences and adding those to the conversation.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here, and I can't wait to unpack all the different lived experiences, the knowledge that I've gained through higher education, and really applying that to then the systems that we're all essentially players in, right? Like, we didn't build these systems, we're just living in them. So it's, how can we learn from these systems? How can we dismantle these systems? And how can we build new systems by people of color for people of color?
Ooh, I love to conspire to dismantle something, girl. My language.
If you have any inspirational words or unique, like, inspiring things of what to us young teens and young Latinas on what is going on in the community about all of that today, if you have any, like, inspiring words for us, you could share.
Yes. Off the top of my mind, I would say rest is resistance. So taking time to take care of ourselves individually so that we can continue in this collective fight. I think so often we are expected to lead the movements. And quite frankly, it is women of color that are at the front lines of these movements, because we are so courageous, because we are so bold. And quite frankly, we've been fighting this fight for centuries. But it is valuable also to maintain our flame by pouring into ourselves, pouring into each other. I think about it as a circle, right? I may be at the top of the circle. I'm feeling all the energy. I'm feeling very positive, hopeful, optimistic. But of course, that circle will eventually go down. And that is when I'm feeling low. And that is my signal to myself of, okay, I need to rest now. And what does rest look like? That looks like very different for many different people. For me, it could be I'm going to stay at home and snuggle with my dog, listen to some music, maybe paint if I'm feeling enough energy to do so. And I think in Latino culture, we are so conditioned and ingrained to always be productive, and our worth is tied to productivity. And so we feel guilty for resting. It's, if we have a job, it's like, let me get a second job because why do I have this free time? I'm just wasting it, right?
You need to go, go, go.
Yeah, and shifting our mindset to know that you need to rest. It's okay to rest. Don't feel negative for resting. So I will tell all my Latinas that are listening right now, in this moment that we're all experiencing together, take time to take care of yourself. And what does that look like for you?
I'm sorry.
No, also don't apologize. We're here to have real conversations.
Yeah. Tell us what you're feeling, if you feel comfortable.
Oh my God. So kind of like going off of Daisy's very inspiring words, I had an assignment today in English class, actually, and my topic is about the name is a day without immigrants, and it was a sad but also a very amazing topic that I got to write about because it also comes with what's happening today with our community and how immigrants are getting treated. Why is it that we people as immigrants are getting treated as less and saying that we're the bad people, we're crazy, we're scary and stuff? Like, we are just normal human beings. Like, our, not to like favoritism a culture or anything, but our culture, I hear from a lot of people, surprisingly, a lot of my friends in my school, that they're like, Hispanic culture is a big culture for whites, blacks, African Americans. Like, everybody loves our music. They enjoy our food. They enjoy our clothing, our dances, all of it. I hear people nonstop at least talk about one of those topics. Like, in class, I was telling Daisy, there was a day where we were talking about, like, food in different Hispanic restaurants, and one of them was her family's restaurant, Goya's, that Love we it. Brought up. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, what? I really want to know what the people today would, what would a life or a world look like without Hispanics, Latin American, Latinas, Latinos, Mexicanos, whatever they call us now. But, like, yeah, I really would want to know what it would look like is a question I really have for everybody, especially, like, in today's world. I did not mean to cry in the beginning. I'm so sorry.
No. Never apologize for showing your emotions.
Never.
An Indigenous elder that I'm connected to once shared with me that, you know, when we cry, it's spirit moving through us. So it's never something that we should be ashamed or think negatively. It's something that needs to be released. And if you keep that inside, it's just going to grow bigger and bigger until it's released. So honestly, I love crying in public. It's my favorite hobby, my favorite activity. But what you said was so powerful, and what so many of us are, you know, reflecting on, questioning, asking. And for me, it wasn't until I entered college and I really started taking classes in Latino studies and really connecting the dots of how did we get here? And truly, the U.S. government will say they hate immigrants, but they're the number one producer of immigrants. If you look to CIA documents and historical documents, you will find that the U.S. government has went to countries in Latin America to, you know, supposedly implement democracy. But really what it was to extract the natural resources of those countries. Mm-hmm. In that process, by overthrowing governments, we have ruined economies. And then, of course, the people living in these countries are displaced. They have nowhere else to go because of the violence, because the economy has fallen. And where do people go when they're displaced? They go to countries where they think that there are opportunities and safety for their families. So it's really ironic for a government to say they hate immigrants when they are the largest producers of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And since the beginning of time, humans have always moved across continents. You cannot stop the movement of people. And really, these imaginary borders made by governments, it's really the control of the narrative. And so for us, you know, we're labeled as Mexicans, we're labeled as Latinos, we're labeled as illegals and so forth. But really who we are, we're Indigenous people of the Americas. And so we cannot fall into the manipulation that is going on right now, and us controlling our own narrative and our own terminology is what's really going to empower us to push forward. So for me, although, you know, I do recognize myself as Mexican American, Latina, and so forth, first and foremost, I'm an Indigenous woman of the Americas, of Turtle Island. And I think once people start recognizing that, they can no longer weaponize terminology against us to make us feel like we do not belong here when we have historically always been here.
Yep. I do have a question because I'm super curious. Like, who in your family originally came down here before, like, you were born?
As in the Quad Cities? Or were you coming where? Where are they coming to?
Coming to, like, the U.S.
Yeah, that's a great question.
So my family originated from Veracruz, Mexico. It's the south of Mexico on the coast. And then we immigrated to Puebla, Mexico, which is more kind of centralized, 2 hours from Mexico City. And then because of John Deere having the work visa that they do, they were actually seeking out immigrant labor, you know, to help in the farms, to help with productivity in factories and so forth. And that, and honestly, we had open borders in the 80s and 70s, which you can look back to and see that crime was historically low when we had open borders. Mm-hmm. All that to say, because of John Deere's work visa, we immigrated from Mexico to Moline, Illinois, because my grandfather, Nestor Moran, was employed there. And we have been here ever since. It is the place that I call home. I'm proud to be a resident of the Quad Cities, and that's why after I graduated college, I knew that I wanted to come back to really pour into the community that poured into me. I know that my situation, my lived experiences are not isolated, so how can I improve that for the next generation of, you know, brown and black girls who are also experiencing what I experienced growing up here?
I love that you're able to track your history and your family so far back and know exactly where you came from. Like, that is a literal dream. Like, sometimes I make up in my head, like, where my ancestors are from. And I think that your story is so beautiful. And, like, hearing you talk about, like, you know, you're from, like, the coast of Mexico. And I love that. And also, it's interesting that you mentioned that when the borders were open, crime rates were historically low. And I think that one of the biggest arguments that people have today is that they feel that immigrants are violent, which is just not true. Also, I feel like black people in America also are pegged as violent people. And so I think it's something that our cultures have in common. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear a little bit more. Forgive me for getting personal so soon, but I'm curious to hear a little bit more about, like, your personal journey. You have an amazing resume, and you've accomplished so much. You probably have a lot of stories and a lot of experiences where, because of who you looked like, even though you had that fancy special resume, it didn't always matter. Can you talk a little bit about some of your experiences in education, in your work as a kid, where you might have experienced racism, sexism, and things that might just, like, stand out to you in your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I'm in conversations with my peers who grew up in Southside Chicago, our experiences in education are so different because I was surrounded by my predominantly white peers. I think in, you know, grade school, middle school, high school, it was probably me and maybe five other Latinos, right? And that was a lot if we were all in the same class. So for me, naturally, it was kind of a survival skill to adapt to the dominant culture. So for me, when I experienced racism, it wasn't one of those moments where it deteriorated me so quickly, because it built my resilience. But as for my friends who grew up in Southside of Chicago, they grew up with, their whole class was brown and black. Everybody looked like them. And so when they went to the University of Illinois and they were surrounded by the white dominant culture, it was a culture shock for them. It devastated them. And for me, I kind of, not to minimize their pain, but because I experienced it so frequently growing up, it wasn't as impactful for me, because I already knew how to navigate those spaces, those conversations, and those biases and microaggressions. All that to say, though, I will share, I remember my first experience was in second grade when we were learning about Thanksgiving, and my classroom, both classrooms in second grade, dressed up as pilgrims and Native Americans. And of course, I was like, I want to be Native American. Like, I want to dress up as an indigenous woman. And I got chosen to be a pilgrim. And I was like, what? Like, why am I dressed as a pilgrim? And I always look back at that photo now, and I'm like, oh, man, if only little 8-year-old Daisy could have, you know, stuck to her decision of, no, I refuse to dress as a pilgrim, which technically was my oppressor as an indigenous Mexican woman. And I wanted to dress indigenous. But even though so, that whole Thanksgiving story was made up for capitalism. It never happened. And honestly, the treaties that were broken and the violence that was created against the Native Indigenous people, it's so funny how history gets rewritten. Mm-hmm. And so if we don't tell our stories, if we don't share our history from our perspective, then we're allowing a different narrative to be controlled, and then that becomes the dominant narrative. Another example is also in second grade, now that I think about it, my second grade teacher, who wasn't my teacher, but the classroom across the hall, I remember they pulled me out of class and they said, oh, they want you to go to Mrs. So-and-so's classroom. And I said, okay. And so I went in there and everybody's sitting at their desk and they told me to stand in the middle. And I'm standing there and I'm like, okay, what's going on? And back then they had like Scholastic magazines. I don't know if they still do. And it was a beautiful photo, if I had to guess, probably of a Guatemalan indigenous woman. And my teacher was like, doesn't this look like Daisy? And in that moment, I was just kind of like, this is weird. But I, as an 8-year-old, I didn't know that was racism. I didn't know that was a microaggression. I just felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so I share those two experiences to show that at 8 years old, I was already experiencing racism. I couldn't label it. I couldn't categorize it, but I knew it made me feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But it also built my resilience to then be the person that I am today. And whether that's for good or bad, it's not isolated experiences. I know it's still happening right now in the Quad Cities. I know other young girls and boys and non-binary children are also experiencing these microaggressions from their educators who just don't have the lens, the equity lens that needs to be developed to be in these spaces to educate brown and black young individuals.
Mm. That's a good point. We had a conversation with Rita Jett in our first part of this series, who's also an educator. And we were talking about like different ways and what needs to be done in order to reimagine like race and racism. And Amaya had brought up a good point, like we need more women in leadership. And like we were talking about all these things, but education, oh my God, like starting in school, starting with our teachers, that is such a good point. And it's not something that we talked about a lot in the first podcast, but I think that we learn so much outside of like the scholastic stuff and the academics. We learn so much about the human contract and culture and how to treat people in school. And so that should be one of the first places that we go when we're talking about what it looks like to heal from racism. And yet they're writing us out of all of the history books. So
we're not going anywhere. Like you can't get rid of us.
Nope.
Y'all tried for years. But here we are.
Yeah. Can I share one more example?
No, too? Yeah, please.
Go ahead.
Another example is I attended Moline High School, and quickly I was placed into lower level math and reading classes.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I've always been a reader, a writer. It is what I love to do is journal. If mm-hmm. you go into my house, you'll see a bookshelf full of journals that I have written since I think the second grade, if I had to guess, second or third grade.
Mm-hmm.
I say all that to say because I was so shocked that I was placed in lower reading classes because mm-hmm. I always thought that was my strongest subject. Quickly, when I entered those classes, I looked around the room and it's all black and brown students. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, am I here because I need this additional assistance and support? Or is it because we were all just kind of profiled and placed into this
mm-hmm.
Classes? And so looking back now, and even my peers, my classmates are like, wow, Daisy, I can't believe like how far you've made it. And even myself, I'm like, I don't even know how I got here because the Daisy that was in high school was told, you will never go to college. You'll be lucky if you even finish Black Hawk College. And I'm very proud alumni of Black Hawk College.
Mm-hmm.
But when I met with my advisor senior year, and every senior had to kind of tell your plan to your counselor, I didn't have a plan, but I saw a poster of the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign.
And I didn't know the reputation that it had or any of that sort. And I just to get out of that meeting, I said, oh, well, I'll just apply it to U of I. And my advisor literally laughed in my face, a white woman. And she said, with your GPA, it's not realistic and you can't afford it. And I just kind of looked at her. I'm like, well, how do you know I can't afford it? So again, I felt like I was being profiled because I was this young Latina and this assumption of authority of I'm an adult and you're essentially a child. So what I say is truth and whatever you think and feel is not truth. Mm. And I feel strongly against that. I feel like young people are the leaders of today. Adults just need to listen to them.
Yeah.
Mm. I find it. Like, we know these things happen, right? Mm-hmm. But the fact that as a Black woman, I literally had the same exact experience down to the school counselor. I excelled in reading, and yet I was put in special education classes, which, again, I want to preface, there's nothing wrong with needing extra assistance, mm-hmm. But it's detrimental when those aren't the resources or supports you need. Mm-hmm. And sitting in my high school counselor's office and her telling me that I was lucky to even graduate high school as an honors student and National Honor Society student as well. It's just, it's a different type of hurt, disgust. And I was telling Rita yesterday that it's very triggering because I had students that had those same conversations. And unlike Daisy and I won't call Daisy stubborn, but I'm stubborn. I was like, so I'm going to prove you wrong. And I did, but I had other classmates that were like, oh, this is what she's telling me. She's the adult. There's nothing I can do about it. And they're still stuck to this mm-hmm. day in that same place. Mm-hmm. So I just think words are powerful. Yeah. And those biases, those that systematic rhetoric that keeps us oppressed as people of color is exhausting. And I, besides rest, like you mentioned, I don't know how to combat that mm-hmm. at this point in my life. But yeah, it's just, that makes me sad that we both had that identical experience on two opposite ends of the Quad Cities and and that was normal.
Yeah. In two different school districts.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Huh. And you know what, Kayla, that was not necessarily my experience. But I think that had a lot to do with you and the fact that you had gone before me through school and you had to, you know, take the brunt of it and move yourself through all of these hurdles from, you know, being wrongfully placed in the wrong class into honors classes. And then next thing I know, I'm being placed in honors classes because I'm a Babers girl, you know? And so it really is like, I this won't make it better at all, but I really feel like you probably paved the way for your adorable little sister.
Oh my God.
Because I didn't have those experiences, and I really think, and I'm sure Mom and Dad will attest, it's because you did the work so that I didn't have to prove myself. They already kind of knew, like, oh, that's Jasmine, that's Kayla's little sister. That's Jasmine, that's Kayla's little sister. Put her in the honors classes, you know?
Yeah. Eldest daughters.
Oh, my eyes are wet.
I feel like I kind of have a similar experience, especially like when you're the only Black young female in a welding class and your teacher makes you feel like you're not good enough or you can't do this because you are a female. And, like, I just feel like something definitely needs to change because I feel like it happens to a lot of colored people, especially when you are a woman. And that's how I kind of got into doing CNC, and, like, I just decided not to do welding or anything like that. But at the same time, I was also the only Black female in my CNC class, but they were more accepting and more helpful. And I was just so hurt that somebody can talk to another person like that. Yeah,
also, I fight welding teachers.
So, square up. Baber's gun, yeah. We don't play. We don't play.
I don't know what made him, like, talk to me, how he, you know, spoke to me, but I was always respectful, and it's something that I really wanted to, like, try to do for, like, new experiences, because I do have an aunt, and she is a welder, okay. And she's been welding for a couple years now, and I just feel like if she can do it, I can do it, you know?
Yep.
And I wanted to follow in her path and try to do something different. I just couldn't put myself in that position, so I just stopped doing it.
Thank you for sharing.
And affirming that you're exactly where you need to be and that you're on the right path. Mm-hmm. And as painful as it is, because, you know, you can't control who your instructor is, maybe unless you take it to the dean, right, and follow those systems, but ultimately, you can't let that one person push you out of your path, right? And as painful as it is, finding those people that are going to be your advocates. Right here, this whole room, we're all your advocates. So if you need us to go and speak to that teacher, we will.
Okay,
you know I will. We show up deep.
If you want to weld, we will move mountains so that you can weld, okay? Like, don't let anybody stop you ever, especially not that loser man, you know what I mean? Daisy is one of the most beautiful, most fashionable people that I know to exist. And I feel like you do such a good job at bringing your own personal style that oftentimes reflects, like, your culture. And you do it in a way that is just so chic and so tasteful and so you. I want to hear your perspective about beauty and race and fashion and anything you want to share. I know that wasn't originally on the agenda, but I feel like you're the perfect person to talk about it.
Oh, thank you so much. And now my eyes are getting watery because this journey that I'm still on has been one of the most painful and challenging journeys, because right now at 29 years old, I feel like I'm finally learning how to love myself. Mm. And in high school, I got bullied, and that really influenced my thoughts on how I saw myself. Mm. I got bullied for my weight, and that's something that I'm still trying to heal from now at 29 years old. I still have body dysmorphia. Mm. And growing up in a predominantly white, you know, community, I thought to myself that I'm not beautiful because I don't fit the mold of the standard of beauty, right, which is European features. And it really took a lot of time to decolonize my mind and learn that my indigenous brown dark features are more beautiful than whatever the dominant culture is trying to impose on me, right? Mm-hmm. There was a time that I dyed my hair blonde. I had green contacts. And I look back at those photos and I think to myself, wow, I was so hurting so badly and I was rejecting myself that I wanted to look someone not like me, when really being myself was the most powerful thing any of us can do. And now that I'm learning to fully embrace myself and love myself, that natural confidence radiates out, mm-hmm. versus of when I was trying to cosplay somebody that I wasn't. You could tell that person was insecure, versus now of fully embracing my dark hair, my beautiful dark brown eyes, my beautiful dark brown skin. I love myself, and you can see that from the outer layer. And I think so many young girls, you know, we get told that you need to be XYZ to feel good about yourself or to
have external attention and validation affirm you when you need to affirm yourself from inside. You cannot let other people control your thoughts and how you view yourself, because if you're constantly seeking that external validation, you'll never achieve it. You will never reach a point where it's like, oh, I've reached enough external validation, I must be beautiful. You will constantly seek it, and it's kind of like you damage your dopamine levels in your brain, like the chemicals that tell you that you feel good. It's kind of like almost being addicted to drugs in a sense, because you're constantly chasing that external validation, and it'll never be enough. It'll never be enough. So you loving yourself is the most powerful thing that you can do, and the most loving thing that you can do. I don't view my body now like I did before in high school. I view my body of, I'm so thankful for this body, for all that it can do. I can walk. I'm an enabled person, which is a privilege that I have. I can do things with this body that I'm so grateful for, versus just looking at the image of, am I a size 2? Am I a size 0? That is so superficial, and we can talk so much about how fashion industries, no sizes are the same. You can be a size 0 at Express and then a size 10 at Dillard's.
Right. Numbers are just numbers. I'm curious to hear from the girlies, too. Thank you, Daisy, for sharing. And when you talked about dyeing your hair blonde and the green contacts, it reminded me of a moment. I was junior high, maybe. It was junior high, and my mom would not let me dye my hair at all. Like, and I wanted highlights so bad, and I wanted light hair, and I wanted straight hair. And so I remember I had read in a magazine, I think, that if you put lemon juice on your hair. If you put the lemon juice on your hair, it lightens it. So I took all my mama's lemons. I took all the lemons and I cut them in half, and I was in the bathroom just rubbing them on my hair. And then I sat outside in the sun and tried to lighten my hair, because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to look different, and I wanted to look like other girls who were seen as more objectively beautiful. And I laugh at that memory, and also kind of feel sorry for my younger self, but also I don't blame myself, though, because, like I said, I saw it in a magazine, and you know how we feel about changing the narratives of what we read in magazine publications, but also I am angry more at the media and at the systems than I am at myself, because I can't blame myself.
Well, I can definitely say that your mom probably saved you from the hair dye.
For sure. Yes, yes.
I was trying to go the natural route, you know? Like, I was like, anything to get, like, some light brown highlights in this head. So I do want to ask the girls, though, your perspective.
Can I step in really quick, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Jasmine. Let me ask you this. Do you know your worth?
I do.
That right there is all that matters and should matter to yourself.
Thank you.
And to all of us women in this room, that is also, that should matter. I am glad that I have really found that out for myself, because these past 2 years have been really difficult for me, and that I have found out and figured out what my worth is.
Yeah. I think that it's a good question to ask. And when you asked it immediately, I was like, yes. But to be honest with you, it's like a day-by-day thing. You know, like today I'm feeling really confident, and I feel like I know exactly who I am. It's probably because I'm in this room with all of you, and so I'm feeling like really empowered, and like I'm with my people, so I'm good, you know. But it's not always like that. And so it's a good – I got to ask myself that every day. In every room. And sometimes the answer is no. But I'm working on it. Yeah.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah.
Light skins versus dark skins. And it's basically like, it's a stereotype. It's also kind of like a stereotype that people outside of the Black community placed on people with inside the Black community. So now they're put together and they're kind of like bumping heads. Which one is better? Oh, we're prettier, or we're prettier, putting people against each other. And I guess I would say, I guess I would say that definitely kind of, in a sense, took a toll on me. I mean, I get it. All people have their own preferences. That's fine. Like, I have my own preferences as well. But I guess, like, if someone was to ask me, do you love yourself? I always say yes. Like, right away. I feel like I love myself, but there's also parts of me that I do not love. Mm-hmm. Like, something I'm healing from recently, like, right now, is my hair. Mm-hmm. Like, I strongly hate my hair. I've never liked it. Like, since I was little, everyone, every time I get it done or it's out in the fro, they're like, oh, it's so pretty. You have gorgeous hair. It's so healthy. It's so dark. It's so, like, it's amazing. I wish I had this hair. And I'm like, why would you say that? Like, why would you lie to me? So it's just, like, me still learning to fully love myself. I love myself. I love qualities. But there's just a certain aspect when it comes to hair texture, how my hair looks. It's just things I don't like about it. Like, I think it's too short. I think it's too, what is it? When my hair gets wet, it shrinks up. I don't like how that looks. I don't think I can rock a fro. I look like a boy. Or, like, just things like that that I feel like make me dislike my hair. But it's definitely helping, like, especially being surrounded by people that help me every day. I have friends that remind me every day. Parents, a boyfriend, like, they all remind me every day, like, your hair is so pretty, you need to wear it out more. And I'm like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I'll give it a try. So I guess, like, I'm definitely healing from that. I've definitely worn it out, actually. I definitely worn it out recently within the past month, guys. They convinced me to wear a fro. When I tell you I went out in public, I was just jittery the whole time. I could not sit still. Yes, it makes me very uncomfortable, actually. But I would definitely say I'm healing from that.
And I think that you should give yourself a little bit of grace, just because I can't speak on colorism because I am on the lighter end of the spectrum. However, community, society, even internally, that's a system. Mm-hmm. It's been ingrained in our culture, how we talk to one another. I was having a conversation with somebody actually, and I said nappy, and it was in a reclaiming of the word. It's not a negative word. It's not a bad thing. And I think you're going to feel that internal struggle because everything on the outside is telling us the closer we are to these Eurocentric beauty features, the more attractive we are. Mm-hmm. So I think you recognizing it, working on it, that exposure with doing things that make you uncomfortable, that's the start. We can't heal hundreds of years of trauma with one hairstyle. Yeah. So I kind of heard the little hurt in your voice. So I just want to remind you that it's baby steps and it's a everyday thing. I will say, in solidarity with my chocolate girlies, my sister, she was so cute. And everybody's like, oh, your sister's so cute. And I was like, oh, it's got to be because, she's brown skin. She's chocolate. So in the summers, while she was doing the lemons, I was lathering up in baby oil and laying out in the sun trying to get that tan. Because I was like, I got to get jasmine level chocolate. And, we didn't quite get there. But I just think it's interesting perspective and your place and how we have these things that we're self-conscious about or that we think other people don't like. And those are the things that people love about us and want to emulate. So that's just my two cents.
Yeah, I would like to say that I feel like a lot of Black women feel that way at one point because I know I have. And I think that's some of why I start constantly dyeing my hair. And then eventually it did get to a point where I had to stop dyeing my hair. My hair is actually dyed right now. But this is actually not my natural hair color, though. It's brown. But my hair is jet black right now. But I just feel like at one point, you're going to feel insecure about your hair. But, it's okay because I never wear my hair out. I always had it in ponytails. Like, I just felt like I didn't understand my hair.
Trust me.
Yeah.
I know, girl. Ileana?
we see colorism in the Latino community as well, yeah. And similarity with the texture of our hair too. I'm born with natural curly hair, and I'm still learning to embrace my natural curls and not use irons to curl my hair and to straighten my hair. Lord knows I straighten my hair every day for high school. But my mother has natural curly hair. Her mother has natural curly hair. And it's really because Latinos, we're a mixture of European, indigenous, and African ancestry. Mm-hmm. And we have been conditioned and taught that proximity to whiteness is, you know, what supposedly will gain us privileges, but we will never gain privileges to proximity to whiteness. So embrace your features, embrace the brownness, don't fight it.
I love it. I feel like there's still so much that we have to talk about, but I know that our time is coming to an end. There's one question that we like to ask each of our guests in the Race Reimagined series, and it's a loaded one, but it's really about if you could reimagine race, which is hard, but like we're talking about like pie in the sky, we're talking best case scenario. If you could imagine a world where race was just or is viewed differently, like what would that look like or what would it feel like?
The current systems that we're living have only existed maybe 250 years, 500 years, 600 years. But to think back of our indigenous ancestors that have lived for thousands of years, I think back to the harmony that they had. And even then, I question kind of comparison to other species. I'm like, do dogs know that there's other dog, you know, breeds other than their own? Or do they all recognize like, oh, we're all dogs? You know what I mean? And I know that's kind of like funny to say, but can we get to a point where all humans are like, we are all one, we are collective, it's us, it's not the individual mindset that divides us. And truly, it's capitalism that's designed this way to divide us, to distract us from, really, it's the working class, all of us, against the billionaires. Mm-hmm. And so they use tactics like race to divide us and get angry at each other, when really, we are the collective one. We are us. And so I am hopeful that one day we can all recognize that, you know, just like how I have three beautiful puppies, and I always look at them and I'm like, do you guys know that you're different, or do you guys all know that you're one? And I hope one day that all of us in the human race can see that too.
Well, this has been an amazing conversation. Daisy, thank you so much for coming, chatting, getting the tears flowing, the laughs laughing, the giggles giggling. It's always an amazing time when you come into the studio. We appreciate your wisdom and your stories, and also just being in community with us always. You are so appreciated, not only in the Her Voice Media community, but in our wider community and all the work that you do each and every day to uplift others. Like, you are so treasured by so many people. And so I hope you know, like Ileana said, I hope you know your worth, girl, because you are a fabulous person. This is our final episode of Race Reimagined, Girls Healing Illinois, and it has been so fun and it's been so eye-opening. We've had so many amazing conversations, and I think, again, storytelling and just being open about race and sharing experiences is the way forward, and that's what we believe at Her Voice Media, and we believe that our girls and the women in our community have amazing insights, and it's our job to uplift them, and we are happy to do the work because we get to spend time with amazing women like Daisy. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time, and you'll hear us next time on another episode of Love Girls the Podcast.